The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you? Things a little bit quieter in Israel.
Yeah, Boker Tov, Howard. 24 hours goes by and it's a completely different situation. It's amazing how things just flip-flop backwards and forwards so dramatically in such a short period of time.
One of our listeners sending a message that I would imagine a lot of people in Israel are feeling this morning. And he says as follows, for Anthony, what is the flipping nonsense that every time Hamas asks for a ceasefire, fire from Israel every flipping time? Lots of question marks after that. Also, why bomb empty buildings without actually killing terrorists? Is this all a charade? All a charade? And about 15 exclamation marks. That's from Mervin.
With lots of flippings.
Lots of flippings, lots of punctuation, huge amount of punctuation. Your thoughts?
Well, Mervin, of course, is not the only one. We've seen the residents of southern Israel take to the streets last night as soon as the ceasefire was announced and as soon as the security restrictions were lifted. Residents of southern Israel took to the streets in protest against the ceasefire. They were burning tires. They were coming out in huge numbers, and more protests are expected today, even though all restrictions on going back to school and things like that have now been lifted for today, and all activities in southern Israel will be held as usual. High school students have decided that they are boycotting school today, along with many of their parents who are trying to protest against the government's decision to accept the ceasefire. So obviously this feeling is not only flipping with Mervin, but indeed with many people across Israel. And of course, people are frustrated by the fact that there seems to have been an opportunity to really deliver a fatal blow to the Hamas terror infrastructure, to really go out and destroy them. And the feeling is that that has not been achieved, that the opportunity was not taken. And the residents of southern Israel are saying to themselves, and indeed to other people, and particularly to the Israeli government, that they don't want to continue to live in the way that they have had to live over the past few years, with what's generally called a trickle of missiles being blasted, being attacked from Gaza from time to time, without any status quo of safety, without any feeling on any given day that there is no chance that they will be attacked. There's always this in the back of their minds, this notion that things might suddenly degenerate into a situation where all of a sudden missiles are being fired. We've seen that in the past. We go through a night where 20, 30 missiles are fired. Everybody's running to their bomb shelters. And then the next morning, it's kind of business as usual. It's activities as usual, as if nothing has happened. And people are getting tired of this situation and saying that a more permanent solution needs to be found, which can assure the safety of the people who live in that area. So I definitely identify with their frustrations.
Yeah, I would imagine it's really quite it's just incredible how quickly it turns around. And as much as peace is something that is lauded and that everybody is looking for, I think that people don't want to be deluded anymore.
That's true. I mean, you know, with regard to this notion of is it all a charade? Again, you know, that statement is being felt by a lot of people, and there's been quite a lot of discussion about what exactly happened in that 25 hours when 500 missiles were fired towards Israel, and Israel apparently attacked 160 targets. But what were the targets? I mean, we're told that there were terrorist infrastructure, we're told that there were tunnels, and we were told that there was a Hamas intelligence location that was attacked. But we do know that most of the sensitive missiles, most of the ammunition, most of the sensitive equipment that is being held by Hamas is being held in locations like hospitals or underneath hospitals and underneath schools and places where Israel, because of the international community's eyes being focused on all of Israel's activities, Israel would never dare to attack any of those very, very sensitive locations. Hamas knows that very well. And we all know that that's really where the crux of the Hamas war machine is being held, both in terms of command control decision making and both in terms of the storage of equipment and missiles and ammunition. So, you know, all of these locations that were attacked, as Mervyn frustrated as he is, wanted to say, I mean, is that a charade? Is there anything really of substance to that?
Well, I would say this, Al Jazeera this morning reporting about a man in Gaza whose university certificates were destroyed. So clearly, I mean, there was real damage there. That's what Al Jazeera were talking about.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, on the other hand, you know, a lot of people were saying, does Hamas really want a conflict or not? Because it was noticeable during the time that all these missiles were being fired that the range that Hamas was firing into Israel didn't really increase dramatically. In other words, there were no attempts to fire missiles, let's say, towards Tel Aviv, for example, or even as far north as
Ashdod. Yes, it was very clearly the south. I actually meant to ask you that yesterday, because it was Israel is almost this tale of two countries, and certainly it seemed that way yesterday, that it was about the south. It wasn't anywhere. Yes, there were times that areas like Modi'in perhaps had to be on alert, but there was nothing that really happened anywhere other than the south.
That's true. And so therefore, it gives us all the impression that there was some sort of a staging to this conflict in terms of the fact that Hamas wanted to make a statement without allowing this to degenerate into an all-out conflict. So if they, for example, had fired a missile towards Tel Aviv, that would have been an entirely different statement than the ones that they made during the time of the conflict. Now, you know, there's a lot of discussion about this bus that was destroyed and the fact that there were so many IDF soldiers who could potentially have been killed and injured in that incident, and not, you know, just by some miracle had happened just to disembark that bus in the moments prior to the missile actually striking it. Now, I would suggest that that could have resulted in a huge degeneration of the situation into an all-out conflict had that bus been hit while it was still full of IDF soldiers. Was that the intention of Hamas? It's not clear, but my notion is that Hamas never intended for this to break out in an all-out conflict, and therefore the way that they fired the missiles was relatively staged. Also, I think what's noticeable, and which some people are holding up as a contrary view, is that Hamas really tried to test Iron Dome quite dramatically by firing at times 20, 30, 40 missiles all at once in a very staged way, getting all of the different renegade groups together, coordinated to fire all of their missiles all at one time in order to try to test whether the Iron Dome was up to that. And in fairness, there were some missiles that broke through the protection that was offered by the Iron Dome, perhaps because of the fact that there were so many fired at once, I don't know. But it almost seemed like a military exercise on Hamas's part to try and test Israel's military capabilities. And I think to some degree, they succeeded in doing that. And I would suggest that Iron Dome overall came out very positively, even though there were some missiles that clearly got through the net. And we have to expect that there will be some from time to time. But overall, if you consider the fact that there were some 500 missiles fired and more than 100 of them were intercepted by Iron Dome, imagine if those 100 had actually landed in those locations, what sort of a disaster we would be looking at today. So I think that Iron Dome overall performed very well, even though there were approximately 15 missiles that actually did ultimately break through the protection offered by Iron Dome. So that's just, you know, another aspect to this discussion. But I think perhaps the most interesting point out of everything is what went on yesterday at the cabinet meeting, which ultimately decided to accept the ceasefire. And there's a lot of press this morning about the fact that the majority of the cabinet ministers at that meeting did not support the ceasefire, including Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman, who is reported to have been very opposed to the idea of a ceasefire. And in the end, you know, from what I've read, there was no vote held at the cabinet meeting. After 7 hours of discussion, the prime minister decided that the cabinet have accepted the ceasefire, some people have said that if an actual vote was held, that the vote would have been against the ceasefire by 7-4. It's not clear whether that's true or not, or whether that's just speculation. But it is very clear that a lot of the senior cabinet ministers were very much opposed to the idea of a ceasefire. And the prime minister then just came out saying that because the defense establishment, obviously on this occasion, excluding the defense minister himself, but the IDF and the defense establishment were very much in favor of a ceasefire, the cabinet had decided to support that and to support their idea of a ceasefire, and he just announced that that would be a ceasefire. No cabinet minister apparently insisted upon a vote. They just accepted it and moved on. So the question is whether the prime minister came into that meeting already having made his decision after consultation with his defense advisors and with the defense establishment. There's a lot of speculation about exactly how that decision was reached and why. There is some criticism of the defense establishment in the sense that they came to that cabinet meeting apparently without offering any real alternative scenarios, which said, we don't accept the ceasefire and this is what we do. They came with effectively one solution, and the solution was accept the ceasefire because the alternatives are all not very good. So, you know, a lot of things that are being discussed and that will continue to be discussed about how this operation was handled, and in particular how the decision to accept the ceasefire was handled.
What's also interesting to me, or noteworthy to me, is, you know, we talk about all these factions in Gaza, all these different groups, yet the minute a ceasefire was announced, or Hamas accepted or proposed, however it worked, the ceasefire, it stopped completely. There were hardly, you know, maybe for a few minutes afterwards there was a shot here or there, but then it just completely fell completely silent, which means that Hamas has a much greater amount of control over the region than we would have believed, or certainly I would.
I think that's right, and you know, very often we hear about missiles being fired, and oh, it wasn't Hamas; it was some renegade group, you know, Islamic Jihad or whatever it is in Gaza. And you know, Hamas has no real control over them. I think there are times when Hamas has greater control, and I think there are times when Hamas has less control. And I think there are times when Hamas uses the situation of the renegade groups in order to get other people to do their dirty work so that they can't ultimately have to be blamed. They won't have to be blamed ultimately for those missiles being fired or for those attacks being made. So I think there's a whole combination of things. It's not exactly clear what was agreed in the ceasefire, because let's go back a few days and remember on Saturday that $15 million worth of money from Qatar in suitcases was transported over to Gaza. My suspicion is that the ceasefire probably entailed some monetary compensation to Hamas as well. And my suspicion is that Hamas might have agreed with the renegade groups that they're going to get some of that money, hence the control that Hamas seems to have over the ceasefire, which went, you know, completely into action, and the missiles went completely dead within a space of minutes. So my suspicion is that there was been some significant carrot that was dangled in front of some of these renegade groups in order to then encourage them to abide by the ceasefire. And I suspect that's come from probably Qatar and from Egypt in the most part.
Very, very interesting. We are